Let's begin. I am very grateful to Byron Shore for sending me a PowerPoint version of the table that I made last week, and I've shared with you in the email this week an updated version of that, trying to make the discussion much more clear than it was on my original table. So I appreciate the tree. The tree diagram certainly works a lot better. And what I want to do is start us off by walking through the question and answer flow here, not in the Gemara, but just based on the chart that that all of you have. So, you know, everyone had the opportunity to download it. I'm going to prefer to watch people's faces as I do this, and you can have it on your screen because I think that will work a lot better in trying to explain what's going on. Because it's really not as complicated as it probably sounded last week. The issue is this. We're talking about having initial relations with a woman on Friday night. And she has never been with a man before. She is a besula. And the question is any malacha violated in such a circumstance? So if you look at the tree, you realize, first of all, we start out with a basic question regarding biology. Question is, where is the blood? And once you know where the blood is, you can determine what the potential malacha is that's involved. Either the blood is stored behind the membrane, and in that case, the halachic concern is that you're making an opening to release the blood on Shabbos, which is either makeh bepatish or boneh, or alternatively, the blood is absorbed inside the membrane. And what you're doing is drawing the blood out, creating a wound. And we noted the Rambam's take is that that creating a wound is an issue of mifarek. You are drawing the liquid out from inside, mifarek, which is from threshing. According to Rashi, the issue is tzoveya, the issue is dyeing, coloring. Tosfos says the issue is netilas neshama. It's like taking a life because blood is called the nefesh. But the issue fundamentally is a function of wounding. So one or the other. We noted that biologically, the answer is that the blood is inside the hymen, not behind it. So you would go with the second approach, not the first one from a scientific standpoint. But that's our initial question. So going with the first option, the first possibility. First possibility is the blood is not inside the hymen, the blood is actually behind it. So that is what we call mifgad pakid. The blood is stored behind it. And then we have certain concerns. Now, I'm going to direct you first to the first page of what I sent out, in which I identified how you could end up saying that their relations are prohibited or that they are permitted. So the first two branches that are listed under prohibiting are either the blood is stored behind and you're creating an opening and that's what you want to do, that's your goal, and you're not allowed to on Shabbos, creating an opening even though this is not an external structure, this is a human body, is still prohibited, just like popping a boil is prohibited. Or alternatively, even if creating an opening is not your goal, if we follow Rabbi Yehuda's view that you are liable for unintended malacha that is not destructive, then you're going to be liable here as well. Even though you didn't mean to create an opening, nonetheless, Rabbi Yehuda says you're liable for unintended malacha. Those are two ways that it could still be prohibited. Whereas, if you jump down to the permission branches, if you say that you're creating an opening, but it's not your goal, and we follow Rabbi Shimon, that you're not liable for unintentional results, then again, you're fine in this case. Alternatively, if you make the argument that this is considered to be destructive to her, and we explain that it could be considered destructive to her, because now she loses her status as a besula, which gets her a higher ketubah, so therefore, you're going to be exempt from liability because it is destructive. Are we clear on the different branches there? We're going to walk through the tree also. I'm just trying to do this as an introduction, and then we're going to walk through the tree version of this as well. Yes, Chuck. You're muted.
When we're talking about creating a hole, is the problem with creating a hole that you're creating a cleat?
So it's not an issue per se of creating a kli, although remember that the Rambam and the Ravid had a dispute about what to call this if you're making an opening. Is it makib epatish or bone? If it's bone, it's definitely not called making a kli. It's considered a structure, not a kli. A kli generally is mobile. The kalim that are not mobile tend to lose their status as kalim. However, if I were to take the makib epatish approach, then maybe you could argue it's a kli. There's a whole discussion about whether bone is relevant for kalim, not relevant for kalim, that may be relevant.
I'm just wondering if, because it's a human being and not an inanimate object, if the rules should be different. Because bone, makib epatish, in the ordinary context, has to do with inanimate objects that you're doing an act of creation with. You're not creating anything with another human being.
So this, right, this goes back to the model that we brought from the Gemara, the model of popping a sore. And we said there it's also called construction. The lesson here is that construction is a broader category than we first assume. That in fact it can apply to the human body. I mean, you're pointing out that it seems a little bit absurd, but that is the way that this is viewed, and it has applications beyond the immediate context. It's a basic principle that yes, this can apply to the human body. I'll give you a third example of where construction is relevant for the human body, and that is braiding hair. The Gemara talks about braiding hair such that it will stay and calls that bone, building, as well. So we have applications for this. That does seem to be the way that it's viewed. So if you're taking the branch that says that the issue is construction, if that's the way that we're looking at it, then again, if that's your intent, you're liable. If it's not your intent, but I don't care about intent, then you're liable. However, if it's not your intent and we say intent matters, then you're exempt from liability. And even if we say that you're liable without intent, if you can argue this is destructive, you will be exempt. We're going to go down the tree, and that's going to help. Flip to the second page of what I sent out, please.
Excuse me, Rabbi.
Yeah.
Before we go forward.
Yep.
One of the things, one of the arguments you put forward was that we could argue it's destructive because by tearing it open, you're reducing her value as a basula. But truth be told, by tearing it open, you're preserving her value as a basula.
Because now she won't be, you will, there won't be a claim that
there won't be financial repercussions because she's not expected to be a basula after Bia with her husband.
Right. And we brought that as one possibility within the second view. The view that says that this is an issue of wounding when you draw the blood, and saying, well, you wanted to draw the blood, is indeed in order to avoid that problem. So yes, that could well be a motivation. That could well be a motivation. And that's going to determine whether I view this as destructive or not. You are correct. There are arguments that you can make both ways. So take a look at the chart. We start out saying mifgad pakid. The blood is stored behind the membrane, and the halachic concern is, hey, you're making an opening. So, two possible paths. Either the opening is the goal, In which case, you're chayev, and that's branch number one. That's chayev one. You're liable. The other possibility is that the blood is the goal, which we explained last time in response to Chuck's question, that we don't really mean the blood is the goal, but the opening is not the goal. So if the goal is pleasure, that's also the opening itself is not the goal. So once I go that route, then either I can say, well, Rabbi Shimon says, since you didn't intend to make an opening, you're exempt. And therefore we end by saying patur, by saying you're exempt from liability. Or we follow Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda says, you're liable, even though you didn't intend it. But Rabbi Yehuda is not the end of the line. Because out of there, you have two possibilities. Even if I take Rabbi Yehuda, who says you're liable without intent, maybe the argument could be made that this is destructive toward a future dowry, in which case you're exempt from liability, or we take the view that that this is not destructive, and that's along the lines of what Chuck wanted to argue, in which case you would be liable. I want to ask, is it clear, but is it more clear than last week? Low bar. We're good? Okay. So that's all if you take the branch that the issue is making an opening. Now we come to the other side. The other side, the other argument, is that the issue here is that the blood is absorbed inside the membrane, and that you are wounding, bruising, coloring, whatever I want to call that. I'm getting a message that my internet connection is slow. My kids are zooming, so it's not so surprising. I'm just going to make sure that my computer isn't doing anything that could also make things more challenging. I can't wait till we go back to doing this on Shabbos afternoon, I have to say. Okay, hang on. Okay, my computer is now doing, hopefully, nothing that's going to be slowing this down. So, within this approach, that the blood is actually stored inside and our issue is wounding. So take a look at the last sheet. I'm going to skip the sheet that has the branches listed. I think it actually works better straight from the table. So this is what we call chiburei michbar. The blood is joined with the membrane, not stored behind it, but joined chiburei, right? Chet bet resh, joined with the membrane. And the concern is that you're causing bleeding, however we interpret the malacha involved. And again, two possibilities. Either the blood is the goal, as noted on the chart, to avoid bleeding on later occasions or to demonstrate that she's a betula, in which case, you're chayev, you're liable, because you wounded and you meant to wound. Or, alternatively, the pleasure is the goal, and again, doesn't mean the pleasure per se, but the bleeding is not the goal. So again, Rabbi Shimon will say, I'm exempt, because you didn't intend this result. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says, you're going to be liable, because he says you're liable whether you intended the malacha or not. However, emerging from Rabbi Yehuda, we say, yeah, but maybe this could be called destructive, right? Just like we said the first time round regarding the opening, maybe this is destructive. Well, if it's not destructive, then you're liable within Rabbi Yehuda's view. What if it is destructive? So here we have a quirk that was not present in the other branch. And that is, you're dealing with wounding. And Rabbi Shimon argues there is no distinction to be made about whether it's destructive or not destructive if you're talking about wounding. It doesn't matter whether it's destructive or not, because wounding by definition is destructive. So therefore, the position of Rabbi Shimon is actually you're liable for destructive wounding, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you're not. So you end up with, and I was asked about this last time, so I want to make sure that it's clear, you end up with a very interesting hybrid position, right? if you take Rabbi Yehuda straight, you're liable, even though there's no intent. However, if it's destructive, you'll be exempt. If you take Rabbi Shimon straight, you'll be exempt from liability because you didn't intend it. However, if I take Rabbi Yehuda regarding lack of intent, and I take Rabbi Shimon regarding destructive malacha, the end result will be that I'll be liable. Because Rabbi Yehuda says you're liable even if you didn't intend it. And Rabbi Shimon says you're liable even if it's destructive when you're talking about Chovil. And therefore, if you take both of those views, you will end up with a hybrid position that prohibits. Do you follow what I'm saying? I'm seeing.
Yeah, but is destructive by definition is wounding. By definition, destructive as opposed to helpful, because we've seen that there were times for certain medical procedures, bloodletting, boiling the lands, were considered not destructive but remedial.
Correct.
So if it's remedial as opposed to damaging, destructive, does that make a difference?
So I think that's part of Rabbi Shimon's argument, right? Is that I don't even need to look at whether something is destructive or not. I mean, let me take a step back. Your specific case, right, the case that you just mentioned, where you wound somebody for a medical purpose, will not exist within this branch. Because there it's miskaving. There you actually intend the wound. So it's not going to fit within this branch anyway. It's going to be with the other branch where the blood is the goal. But this is part of the quandary of destructive malacha, that some malachos, by definition, inherently, are what we would call, in certain settings, destructive. Depending on your goal, depending on what you're actually doing. That's true. This is a discussion that's more a Gemara Shabbos discussion, but I think it is an important one to consider. So,
why in the second case are we not concerned about the opening? Like, isn't there still an issue of making an opening in the second case, even though the blood is, like, inside and not behind? Like, isn't you still making an opening where, like, even if you have a wine barrel, it doesn't, you know, if you break the wine barrel, you're not making an opening either way, so why is that not an issue in?
Right. So that's a good question. So the issue of making an opening per se is not a problem unless what you're doing is trying to facilitate transfer of something from one side to the other. So if I have a barrel and I smash it, I'm exempt from liability even though I made an opening. However, if I make a spigot, right, I put in a tap, you know, then indeed I am liable. There has to be, the idea of an opening is that you are creating functionality such that this can be used for transport from one side to the other. The argument you could make, but the Gemara would reject, is that maybe this facilitates sexual relations in the future. So is that what making the opening is doing here? But the Gemara will reject that because the Gemara is going to argue that sexual relations don't rely on the breaking of the hymen. They can happen regardless. That's the idea. You follow?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So that's the tree that we were trying to get through last time. I'm seeing from the questions and from the looks on people's faces that this is clearer than it was last time. Should we walk through the Gemara on it, or should we go further from this point rather than risk damaging people's solid understanding of what we've done?
I say go through with the Gemara.
Jack says go through it. I saw...
I have to disagree with Jack.
Okay, so what we're going to do is proceed from here in the Gemara. I think I'm not going to go back over it. I think we have a solid grasp, and that's good. Actually, you know what? I take it back. We are going to, because I think it actually will be a good way to reassure people that they actually got it. I think you'll see once we go through it that you actually do have it, and I think that's a good thing. We're at the bottom of Hey Amud Beis. You'll see. I think that is the way to go. Okay. Ibayaluhu is our question. You see where I am on the screen? If you're using your own Gemara, so you're about, oh, I'd say 25 lines up from the bottom, 20 to 25 lines. Ibayaluhu, we're on 5b, Hayamud Beis. Question. Mahu livo betchila b'Shabbos. Is it okay to have relations for the first time on Shabbos? Dam mifkad pocket o chibure michbar. Is the blood stored behind the hymen, or is it actually absorbed in the hymen? And now we take our first branch. Vim timtzalomar dam mifkad pocket. If you're going to tell me it is stored behind it, so do I say ledam hutzarech vishari? All he wants is the blood, and therefore there's no issue of making the opening, and it's permitted. O dilma, or perhaps lepesach hutzarech vasir. What he wants is the opening, and therefore it's prohibited because that's what he's accomplishing, opening it such that the blood drains out. Vim timtzilomar ledam hutzarech upesach lemela kaasi. And if you're going to tell me that he really wants the blood, he doesn't want the opening, the opening just happens automatically, and therefore you'll tell me this wasn't his intent, so what's the law when it's not your intent? Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon da'amar davar she'in miskavei mutter. Does the law follow Rabbi Shimon who says if it wasn't your intent, then it's permitted? O halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda da'amar davar she'in miskavei asur. Or does the law follow Rabbi Yehuda who says even if it's not your intent, it's still prohibited? V'im timtzilomar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. And if you're going to tell me the law follows Rabbi Yehuda and therefore you're liable even though this opening was not your intent, mikal gelhu eitzel ha'pesach, Omitakin who eats a la Pesach, is he considered to be destroying when he makes this opening? Because she's no longer a basula. Omitakin who eats a la Pesach, or is he actually fixing, improving things when he makes the opening? That's all the first side. Then the other side. Ika di Amri. Some said, Vim tim tzilomar dam chiburei michbar. We're about 8 lines up from the bottom, 9 lines up from the bottom. If you're going to say that the blood is absorbed in the membrane, ledam hutzarech va'asur, he needs the blood, and therefore this is prohibited. He's trying to get the blood. That's what he wants, and therefore he has now done what he intended. Odilma lahanas atzma hutzarech v'shari. Or do I say no? This was about his personal satisfaction that he did it. It wasn't about the blood. It was any reason other than the blood, and therefore the act is permitted. V'imtim tzilomar lanas atzma utzarech v'dama mela ka'asi. And if you'll tell me he did it because he wanted the pleasure of it and not the blood, the blood just happens. Still, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, oh halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Does the law follow Rabbi Yehuda? You're liable even though this was not your intent. Or does the law follow Rabbi Shimon who says you're not liable? V'imtim tzilomar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. And if you'll tell me the law follows Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you're liable when it's not intentional? Mikalkil b'chabura o mitakin b'chaburahu. Could you still argue that the wound he creates is destructive and therefore you're exempt from liability? But even if you'll say it's destructive, v'imtim tzalomer mikalkil b'chaburahu, even if you'll say that it's destructive, b'mikalkil halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, when you're dealing with mikalkil, with a destructive act, we follow Rabbi Yehuda to say you're exempt from liability, over on Tevavah Med Aleph. Oh, halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, or does the halacha follow Rabbi Shimon? So I'm going to pause sharing now. We just walked through very quickly the flow of the Gemara. Are we good? We got it? You know, it never ceases to amaze me that this is a Gemara that we learned back in elementary school. And I'm not sure if I'm more amazed that they taught us about this, boys, in elementary school, or the fact that we actually got and understood the Gemara's tree of questions. Nonetheless.
Can I?
Yes.
If you want to push off the strength of the addressing this question to another time. It's okay. I just want to make sure I understand intent. Because you can have an intention to have relations with your wife while being cognizant that what you're doing will result in a flow of blood.
Correct.
So there might be a primary intent and an acknowledgement that your actions produce an intent.
Right.
You may know what you were doing, and that by itself is sufficient of intent. So when we're talking about intent in this context, what are we talking about?
Good question. We're actually going to hit that a little further along. We're going to talk about a case in which there's a barrel with a rag as a stopper in the barrel. And when you push the rag into place, you squeeze out liquid that's been absorbed in the rag. And the question is going to be, just because you know it is going to happen and it's a necessary step, can you argue, yeah, but it's not my intent, even though that which causes that to happen absolutely is my intent? So it's going to be relevant in that discussion.
Okay.
So the Gemara wants to know psak. So what do we do in this case? Is it permitted or is it prohibited? So the Gemara is going to say that it is indeed permitted. But watch the way this works in the Gemara. It's very interesting. So we're back on Vav Amud Aleph, the top line. Bevei Rav Amri, in the yeshiva of Rav, they said, Rav Shari Ushmuel Asar. They said, Rav holds that it's permitted. Shmuel says prohibited. Beneherda Amri, and in Neherda they said, that was the town where Shmuel lived, Rav Asar Ushmuel Shari. Rav prohibits, Shmuel permits. So where in Rav's yeshiva they said, Rav permits. In Shmuel's town, they said, Shmuel permits. So Amar of Nachman Bar Yitz, the assumption is there's a debate. And whoever I am with says mutter. So Amar of Nachman Bar Yitz, like Rav Nachman Bar Yitz, like said, V'simaneich, if you want to remember who says what, Elu Mekilin La'atzman, Ve'elu Mekilin La'atzman, each one is lenient for himself. That's the way Rav Nachman reads it. So here there's a very interesting Rashi, which I want to show you. The Chasam Sofer picks up on this. Rashi on this Elu Mekil Na'atzman, that each one is lenient for themselves. If you see where I'm pointing in Rashi, Devei Rav, in the yeshiva of Rav, Shetzrichim La'asos Kedivrei Rabban, where they have to do as their Rebbe says, Omrim Sharaban Hitir. They said their Rebbe permits. V'neherda'a ha'osim kishmuel, whereas in Neherda'a, where they follow Shmuel, kishmuel Rabban, they follow their Rebbe Shmuel, Omrim Shmuel Hitir. They say Shmuel permitted. So when you read this Rashi, I don't see anything particularly stand out. It looks like Rashi's just recapping what the Gemara said. But the Chasam Sofer caught a nuance, a difference between the way that Rashi frames Rav's order and the way Rashi frames Shmuel's order. Do you see a difference between the two? There is a difference. I would stop sharing so I could see you, but some of you I know are reading the Rashi on the screen.
It's the Vayrav versus the people of Narda.
Right. Their populations are different. In Rav's case, and that was really the Gemara, that's not Rashi's Chiddush. That's the way it's framed in the Gemara also. The Gemara said itself, Vayrav versus Neherda. So Rav's is a yeshiva population, and Shmuel's is the general city population. What else is different? There's a second
difference. In the first instance, they're obligated to go in accordance with their Rebbe. It's not said the same in the second instance.
Good. In the first part, it says in the yeshiva of Rav, Shetzrichim lasos kedivrei Rabban, who has to follow their Rav, Whereas in Neherda, for Shmuel, it says Neherda ha'osim kishmuel. Neherda, where they follow Shmuel. So the Chasam Sofer said, Talmidim have no choice but to do as the Rebbe Paskins. They are Talmidim of Rav. They're learning in Rav's yeshiva. He is their Rav Muvhak. He is their outstanding, ongoing source of their Torah. And therefore, they have no choice but to follow Rav. Whereas, in a community, you follow whoever the current posek is. A new posek comes along, you follow the new posek. You're not tied to the Mara D'Asra beyond the Mara D'Asra's tenure, is the point of the Chasam Sofer. So therefore, he says, in the yeshiva of Rav, they have to follow whatever Rav says. Whereas in Neherda, they did as Shmuel said. However, Shmuel leaves, somebody else shows up, they're going to follow whoever comes along. It's a side note, but it's a very interesting side note from the Chasam Sofer about how Psak works.
Rabbi, yeah. Before it doesn't work that way, if we have a machlok is Rav Shmuel, and that in itself, there's a rule of thumb generally when it comes to Rav Shmuel.
Yes.
But we don't go like, we ultimately come up with a Psak. We don't say, well, these guys are going to go with Rav, these guys are going to go with Shmuel. We have a machlok is,
So the answer is yes and no. Rav Simi's question is, we have, the Gemara gives us rules of Psak, and in a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, as a general principle, in financial matters we follow Shmuel, in Isser Veheter, issues of what I am allowed to do, not allowed to do, we follow Rav. So why is this in Shmuel's town they follow Shmuel, in Rav's town they follow Rav? And the answer is, because those rules are articulated for a population that is not in Shmuel's town and that is not Talmidim of Rav. It's a generation later and everybody else. The Rav's Talmidim are going to follow Rav. And when you say to them, but this is a financial matter, they say, thank you very much, and they go on following Rav. In the same way that Rav doesn't change his mind because Shmuel says something and it turns out to be a financial matter. Rav never heard of the rule that when it's a financial matter, you follow Shmuel. He's not interested in that rule. And ditto for Shmuel in the other direction. In the same way that we find with various Tanoim that in their town, they did what the Tana said, right? The classic examples. In the Mishnayos in Rabbi Elazar de Mila, in the Gemara in Shabbos about having chicken and milk in the land of Rabbi Yossi and preparing the Mila knife from scratch in the town of I think it was Rabbi Eliezer there. Where Rav is, they're following Rav. Where Shmuel is, they're following Shmuel. And everybody else has these nice rules about how to decide which one is right.
It says. Ha'osim kishmuel, right? Isn't like the Hei Hayadiyah that maybe some people do follow Shmuel, some people don't?
Maybe. I'm not sure that I would be that precise with it. You know, it could just be those in Neherda who follow Shmuel. It doesn't have to be the, these are Shmuel's gang, so to speak. Not sure. Okay. So, we still have some time, so I want to start us off on what comes next. The Gemara is going to give us a series of challenges to Rav's position. And this is the case that I already mentioned to Chuck, the case of the barrel stopper. That is the first challenge. So I'm going to go back to sharing the Gemara again.
Rabbi Tuchinik, can I just ask you a quick question before we go on?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me we don't have a clear answer as to what Psak Kalacha is. We just have different opinions. Isn't my understanding is that having relations with a Basula on Friday, the Halacha is that it's permitted?
Yes.
Correct?
It is mutter.
It doesn't come out that way. It just gives opinions.
So right now, the Gemara is not done with the conversation because it's about to challenge the positions that we've just stated. But if you pause here, you right now have Rav and Shmuel both being quoted as saying mutter, and that's pretty good.
Okay.
But the Gemara is not done with the conversation. Okay. So we are the end of the fourth line on Vav Amud Aleph, Virav. And the Gemara asks, Virav Shari, does Rav actually permit You're telling me Rav allows this initial act on Shabbos? The Ha'amar Rav Simi Bar Chizkiya Mishmeid the Rav. Didn't Rav Simi Bar Chizkiya quote Rav to say the following? Hai Misuchraya Dinizaisa. Misuchraya Dinizaisa is the stopper in a barrel. Nizaisa is a barrel. And Misuchraya, like Samach Chaf Reish in Hebrew, right, which is a term for a dam, something you would use to stop something up. So the stopper in a barrel, Asur Lahaduka Biyoma Tava. You're not allowed to press it into the barrel on Yom Tov. You also would not be allowed to press it into the barrel on Shabbos. We happen to be mentioning Yom Tov here, but it's going to be Asur on Shabbos as well. And the point is that our concern here, as Rashi notes, Rashi Asur Lahaduka Mishum Schita. Rashi says the concern here is that you're squeezing stuff out of the cloth. And Rav says, I'm not allowed to press the rag into the hole. And he says, why? You're not concerned at all with squeezing stuff out. That's not why you do it. You do it in order to keep the contents of the barrel inside the barrel. Right? That's the goal. The goal is to store the contents of the barrel inside the barrel. Your goal is not to squeeze anything out. This seems to indicate, if Rav says you're not allowed to put in the stopper, Rav follows Rabbi Yehuda, that Davar She'eno Miskavin is prohibited. And if Davar She'eno Miskavin is prohibited, if when I lack intent it's still Usur, then why is it that he's telling me that initial relations are permitted? Okay, everyone clear on the question? Right, everyone up on the question, we're good? How is it that you could on the one hand tell me initial relations on Shabbos are mutter, and on the other hand tell me you're not allowed to put the stopper in the barrel? These two things contradict each other. That's our question, to which the Gemara gives an answer. And the Gemara's answer is, Bahahu, in that case, we're on the seventh line, in that case, the stopper case, Afilu Rabbi Shimon Modeh. Even Rabbi Shimon will agree that it's prohibited. Why? De Abaye v'Rava de Amri Travayhu Modeh Rabbi Shimon v'Psik Reshe v'Lo Yomus. Because as Abaye and Rava both said, Rabbi Shimon, who says you're exempt for a davar she'eno miskavein, believes that you're still liable where it's Psik Reshe, which we explained last week, where the result is guaranteed. So in other words, I'm going to stop sharing the screen so I could explain it. What we are saying here is that the case of the stopper in the barrel is guaranteed to create schita. You're guaranteed to squeeze out some liquid from the stopper. And therefore Rav prohibits. Whereas the case of initial relations on Shabbos is not guaranteed to do whatever malacha is involved, whether that's making an opening or whether that's wounding. The suggestion is that that's not a guaranteed result. You follow? We good? Okay. Well, this creates a bit of a problem. There's a very interesting Tosfos on this. And I'm gonna skip most of what Tosfos has to say here. He has a long discussion saying that it can't really be an issue of schita, because schita, wringing something out and getting liquid out, doesn't apply when you're dealing with wine, it only applies when you're dealing with water, because schita is about washing something and it'll be cleaner afterwards, and it won't be cleaner if you squeeze out wine. I'm not getting into that part of Tosfos' conversation. What I do want to get into, and this takes us back towards what Chuck was asking about before, is the comment Tosfos makes about a psik reshe, where you have zero interest in the resulting malacha. And this is something that we deal with all the time. I just noticed for the very first time, when I walked home from shul Friday night, there was a light on the other side of the street. They must have set up the detector incorrectly, you know, for detecting, it has a motion detector, and it's triggered by people walking on the other side of the street. Which makes no sense, and it's not to their advantage. Someone should tell them that. Nonetheless, the question now is, on the one hand, it's a psik reshe. It is so sensitive that I know when I walk down that street, I'm gonna trigger the light. On the other hand, I have zero interest in doing so. So now the question is that called davar sheino miskaven or not? Now, in the case of walking, you have another advantage, which Post can point out, which is that's not the normal way to turn on a light. Walking is still not, at this current stage of technology, the normal way that you turn on lights. As opposed to twisting a stopper into the hole in the barrel, which is a normal way to squeeze out liquid. So the two are not entirely analogous. But I want to draw your attention. Yeah.
So does that make it a combination of a shinui and a lo nichale? And that's why it's better?
So it's actually not called shinui. The poskim who point this out say it's not called shinui. It's not the act associated with that malacha at all. It's better than shinui.
Oh, okay.
Shinui is, there's a normal way to do things, and I'm doing it in an abnormal way. This is called not the act of the malacha at all. They're even more lenient as a result. I mean, there's more to be said about the walking thing. I just brought it up because it happened Friday night. But what I want to show you here, in the interest of time, I'm not going to read it from inside, but if you look at the long Tosvos, Dam Mifkud Pakid, and specifically you look at, not Dam Mifkud Pakid, we're on Vav Amud Aleph, the Tosvos Hai, and the part where he starts with Vahacha Omer Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam says, the malacha involved here cannot be the malacha of nefarek, of drawing liquid from inside the stopper. Because the liquid that gets squeezed out is destroyed. Right? I mean, when you put in the stopper, the liquid drips down, and you're never going to benefit from that liquid. And therefore, he says, it's called, yes, a guaranteed result, but it's lo nichale. It's not what you want at all. And therefore, he says, this is permitted. You can't call it mefarek. If it were really an issue of nefarek, of drawing liquid out of the stopper, then it would be permitted, even if it's a guaranteed result, because you have no interest in it. And he brings some interesting examples. Maybe we'll come back to it in the beginning next time. I'm not sure. There's more to be said with it. But I wanted to at least point that out, because it becomes relevant in various halachic discussions. And Chuck, to go back to your point, the reason I think this is relevant for your question is because what we're really establishing here is results for which you want that to happen, and not as a side effect, but you actually have an interest in that result, count as desired results. Whereas the fact that this is a function of something I wanted, the fact that it's a function of something I wanted doesn't make it a desired result. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. You follow? You say yes, but your eyebrows say no. All right, maybe we'll pick up with this next time. It's a worthwhile conversation. We'll see. All right, be well. Have a good week.